All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rinkwide Vancouver. Boy, did the Vancouver Canucks need that one. Picked up their second win in 8 games, holding on for a 2-1 victory in Anaheim in the opener of a 3-game road trip that only gets tougher from here. This is Rinkwide Vancouver, coming to you remotely. Usually we're in our studio in the lower lobby of the Wall Center Hotel. If you're looking for meeting or conference space in downtown Vancouver, the Wall Center offers 30 unique event rooms, from small conference rooms to the grand ballroom to the Constellation floor, 34 stories above the city, with incredible views and an outdoor patio space. Consider the Wall Center for all of your conference and event needs. Email sales at wallcenter.com. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by Farhan Lalji of TSN. And they were the better team for the bulk of the 60 minutes, Farhan, but boy, nothing comes easily for the Vancouver Canucks these days.
Yeah, you know, they started out really well, right? The first period was very strong, outshot them 15-3. I think the scoring chances were 11-3 in favor of Vancouver in that period. And they did a lot of positive things. They were probably unfortunate to only be tied going into the intermission, but second period, they didn't look good. Third period, it was kind of okay, right? I mean, they gave up some pretty high-end scoring chances, but Anaheim didn't necessarily force Casey DeSmith into great saves. They missed the net. Shots got blocked. So it could have been cleaner. And look, I don't want to be a wet blanket. I'm the guy that when they lost the first 3 games of that previous road trip before the Seattle game, I was the don't panic guy. And I'm not suggesting they should panic here, but all is not right because of a win against a really bad team that's nowhere near the playoffs.
I'm with you. I liked the first period. And yeah, you know, the way they started, the shift that led to the Hoglander goal, they absolutely dominated. Quinn Hughes working his magic, Hoglander with his 19th of the year, and you thought, okay, like, this is the start you're looking for. Let's be honest, the Killorn goal, a bit of a fortunate bounce, because you're right. I mean, under the hood, in that first period, the shot attempts were 24-8 for the Canucks. The shots on goal were 14-3 at even strength. The scoring chances were 10-3, and the Ducks didn't register a high-danger chance, even though they did score off a bit of a broken play from a sharp angle. But this is where you got to be mentally tough and tell yourself you're the better team, and you just got to stick with it. And then in that second period, like, boy, these are the Ducks. They don't score a lot. They don't win a lot. They didn't generate a ton of shots, but I thought they made the Canucks defend an awful lot in that second period, and Canucks were back of their heels a little bit. Shots were even at 8 apiece in that second period. The only goal of the second was the Connor Garland goal that turns out to be the final goal of the game, the winner. But still, yeah, I'm with you. And I said right off the top, I mean, this trip gets tougher from here. The week ahead is at Los Angeles, at Vegas, home to Winnipeg, and home to Colorado. Find me the easy game there. So 2 points is 2 points. They needed it. They add to their total. They're up to 85. Now they're 39th win of the year. They're 39-17-7. But I would suggest that, you know, these types of performances against any of those upcoming opponents may not yield the same result.
Yeah, there's a ways to go, you know, and we talked about whether or not Elias Pettersson getting his contract done was going to create a level of comfort. And really, you know, with a player of that stature, not only would it create comfort for Pettersson, but it would potentially have the ability to create comfort for everybody, right? Do you know what I mean? Just because, you know, they feed off him so much. And, you know, he looked fine. He didn't look exceptional. He looked fine. But, you know, I think I'm trying to get a sense of whether or not the Canucks, there were some moments where it looked like turnovers were there to be had and Anaheim just didn't take advantage of it, where a team like Colorado, you know, or Vegas or LA certainly would, especially Colorado and Vegas, right? So, you know, there's still some structural things they need to improve on. You know, when they decided to split up Hughes and Hronek, you know, I got the sense it was because they wanted to, you know, find other ways to exit the puck, because there were times when Juleson and Zadorov were having some challenges, and then that experiment lasted two periods before they went back to it. And there still are some moments on the forecheck where Juleson and Zadorov have some challenges. So there's a lot of things that need to get cleaned up as they get into the better opponents again. Because when you look at this team, I'm not one that buys into the narrative that they can't beat good teams, because early on in the year, they did beat good teams. But as things have turned since the All-Star break and they've struggled against good teams, they do need to prove that to themselves again, in my estimation.
Yeah, looking at Pettersson's night, 18 minutes and 24 seconds of ice time, 3 shots on 5 attempts, went 5-4 in the faceoff circle. And he was part of that play. He doesn't get a point on it, because it was the Triple H goal, Hoglander from Hughes and Hronek, but Pettersson was out there. In fact, they started a line change. Connor Garland came onto the ice to replace Pia Suter as the Canucks dominated, and eventually Hughes worked the puck around down low and set up Hoglander in front. This wasn't a banner night for Pettersson. It's sort of a continuation, I think, of really his play since the All-Star break, but he wasn't bad. He just, against some of these lesser opponents, at some point here, you do want to see him step up and dominate. And then a little bit of concern there with about 4 minutes to go when he took that puck up high, sort of in the collarbone area. Ultimately, I think he's going to be okay, but you don't want to see any of the Canucks star players taking pucks up high like that. And I think that may have been his final shift of the night. And then the Canucks were forced to hold on. And these are the Ducks. And man, they had the Canucks pinned. Elias Lindholm had a chance to easily exit the zone and elected to try to make a pass that got picked off. And that compounded the problems for the Vancouver Canucks. But, you know, again, we'll come back to this. This will sort of be a central theme here of this episode, is that it is a win. It's 2 more points. They're just trying to run a bunch of teams out of rocks, essentially, here. And so every win is a good win for the Vancouver Canucks with 19 games to go. Now, we talked about Pettersson. Let's jump in on his line mate, because Nils Höglander's 19th goal of the season, all at even strength. At one point, the Canucks had 4 shots in the hockey game. He had 3 of them. The motor was running. This, I thought, was one of Nils Höglander. And he's had a bunch of them, but I thought this was one of Nils Höglander's better games.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic on the forecheck, right? He was just noticeable virtually every shift. And, you know, you look at that line with Pettersson and Suter and Höglander. That was by far the Canucks' best line on the night in terms of Corsi, as far as their shot attempts go. In terms of high danger chances, it was 9-0 with that line on the ice, 24-8, I think, when Pettersson was on the ice in terms of just shot attempts. So they did carry it, but I think it was a result of just that dog on a bone mentality that Höglander has. And, you know, like, he retrieved pucks. He kept pucks in the offensive zone. He gave his line mates and the defensemen that were on, and quite often it was Hughes and Hronek. He gave everybody an opportunity to have second chances to make things happen. So, I mean, this guy has lived up to his ice time, you know, and the opportunity he has to play in the top six, I think, is just fine. Like, I know that not having him in the bottom six has affected that line's ability or that group's ability to score. But, you know, I think once they get Dakota Joshua back, I think some of that's going to change. I want to see him stay with Pettersson. You could debate who the other winger should be on that line, but Nils Höglander absolutely should be staying with Pettersson on a regular basis.
All right. Well, you mentioned Dakota Joshua. Let's talk about Dakota Joshua light. They call Vasily Podkolzin up from the minors.
Yeah.
I kind of thought, like, you know, he didn't practice with the team when they skated at Rogers Arena on Saturday. And usually Rick Tocchet's been one of those guys that, you know, you got to practice before you play kind of thing. Not in every situation. And even Archdeep Baines got called up. He had to sit and watch for a couple of games before he got plugged in. Now, Podkolzin's played at this level, so maybe it is a little bit different there. But Baines got sent down. They call up Podkolzin. And I thought he looked right at home. Again, keeping the level of opponent in mind here. But for his first game in the National Hockey League in a year, I thought pretty seamless on that line with Elias Lindholm and Connor Garland. 12 minutes and 39 seconds of ice time. Doesn't register a single shot, but I thought he pressured the puck well. He got a little look on the power play, the second power play unit in the second period when the Canucks had their two power plays. And I think for me, it was just this sort of felt like, you know, stepping into a situation that he has been in before. And if this is his launching point for this year, like, I want to see more of him. I want to see him in Los Angeles. I want to see him against Vegas, some of these bigger, heavier teams where, you know, I think his size and power can really be a factor for the Canucks.
Yeah, I agree with you. Scoring chances 7-1 with Podkolzin on the ice. And, you know, consider that I think it's easy to plug and play guys in that third line. And the reason for that is there's just nobody else in the fourth line that deserves a greater opportunity than what they're currently getting. So yeah. And to your point, he's played in the NHL before. He spent virtually a full season in the NHL earlier in his career. So the circumstances are entirely different than Baines, even though Baines might've been the better player in the American Hockey League. I just think, you know, from Podkolzin's perspective, what to expect. I think they've waited long enough to make him extra hungry. And he did not look out of place at all. Like, you know, I think with Baines, we saw a very good game one. And then kind of as it went, you know, he leveled off a bit. I'm not going to say he played poorly, but he didn't necessarily build on the first performance. And he'll get another chance again, and he'll be better for it. I think Podkolzin here is just going to get better and better.
I guess, you know, if there was one area that I wanted to see, and maybe it'll take him a little bit to ramp back up, but I don't really even care about goals and assists. They've got enough guys that do scoring. You want to see him contribute, and I think he did that. I mean, he kept plays alive. They spent, as you had the numbers there, I mean, they spent most of their shifts in the offensive zone. He had a nice pass to Besser in the first period, just kind of laid a pass off in the middle of a line change that Besser got a decent look there. But I do want to see him more physical, and officially doesn't register a hit. I think he pinned some guys, was able to separate the puck, was hounding it behind the net on the forecheck and those types of things. But ultimately, I do want to see him a little more physical than he was in this hockey game.
Yeah, and I think that's going to take time because I think hits do take timing, right? You know, we saw him make a good play midway through the second period when he intercepted a pass in the defensive zone and cleared. There was also a chance where he set up Quinn Hughes that led to some zone time for the Canucks. Hughes had a prime scoring opportunity off that feed with about 9 minutes to go in the game. And, you know, so like I said, I thought he was fairly noticeable. And yeah, I do think you're right. I mean, a lot of people would feel that hits are so much more controllable than scoring chances. But it felt like for me, I think he was just so much trying to be positionally sound and have the staples that would allow him to earn the trust of his coach as opposed to going out and trying to chase a level of physicality. But I think that'll come quickly for him.
Well, as we kind of go through some of the individuals in this game, it's been a storyline here for a while, Farhan, but the Canucks have an Ilya Mikheyev problem. They do. I mean, there's just no other way around it. And even though he had a couple of opportunities in the third period, I mean, I think that underscores more of the Ilya Mikheyev issue here that's now 31 games without a goal, playing with Elias Pettersson for the most part, and now getting an opportunity to play with JT Miller and Brock Besser, and that line didn't figure in the scoring. Miller does get the second assist on the Garland goal at the tail end of the power play there early in the second period, but Ilya Mikheyev on the doorstep from Miller was kind of being taken down, but, you know,
that should have been a penalty. It really should have. Well, like, I don't know how you missed that.
Hang on. I'm going to say it should have been a goal.
Okay, fair enough. But
if you think
it was a penalty, that might be the reason there wasn't a goal. But
and then off the rush with about 6 minutes to go with Besser and Pettersson, and he gets a shot away, but it's not terribly threatening. And, you know, 14 minutes and 40 seconds of ice time, two shots on goal, one hit. I noticed him early in the game turning away from contact. And I even tweeted, like, if he's not going to score at this level, and I'm not expecting him to absolutely steamroll guys, like, that's not who he is or part of his game, but you have to initiate contact. And especially as this team works closer to the playoffs, you know, in playoff series, like, every hit matters. It's attrition. It all adds up over the long haul. And I mean, this is a big week, obviously, for the Vancouver Canucks with the trade deadline coming up on Friday. I don't know where it goes from here. But the thing that I can't understand is Andrei Kuzmenko got benched, he got scratched, The coach called him out. He got traded ultimately. And Ilya Mikheyev doing nothing for the Vancouver Canucks seems to get promotions here.
Yeah, but he's not the defensive liability that Kuzmenko is. So it's not completely apples to oranges, right? And I hear what you're saying, but sometimes there's just no other obvious candidate to put up the lineup right now because they're down a top six forward, right? And if you when I say down, we're not talking about injury. They're light one. They need another guy. So they've kind of been shuffling the deck chairs, as it were, in that area. Now you could say, okay, we'll put Connor Garland up there, but then what are you doing to Elias Lindholm, right? So if they got Joshua back, I would imagine you're going to see a scenario where you see Lindholm elevated back to the top six and they try to reunite that line with Teddy Bluger and Garland and Joshua when that happens, right? And then maybe that becomes the solution. And then you put Mikheyev on your bottom line just so that he can kill penalties and, you know, and go out there for 7 or 8 minutes a game. And that ultimately might be the solution when they're healthy. But, you know, you have to believe they're going to try to move this guy at the deadline, right? He's got 2 years left on that deal. You know, there's a debate in the market about what his actual value is, but the contract is not an albatross, right? I mean, you know, you might have to retain a bit, but it might be movable. But if you, you know, if they retain, you know, whatever, $1.5 million for the sake of argument out of $4.5 million, they still free up $3 million to potentially go out and get a legitimate option to go into their top six. We still don't know what's going to happen with Phil Kessel. But right now, it's just, is Mikheyev better than Lafferty? Is he better than PDG? Is he better? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what we're talking about in terms of what his deployment is based on. Because you can't completely saddle Lindholm.
No, but I was going to say, I think they're all the same guy right now, aren't they? Like, PDG could have flipped the script in this hockey game. Glorious opportunity in that second period off the rush set up by Connor Garland. And, you know, the Canucks needed a little bit of breathing room there, what might have been. Mind you, I say that. And Bo Grew thought he had scored when he came down the left wing and clanked one off the intersection of the post and the crossbar. So, you know, the Ducks were that close from tying it. The Canucks were that close to extending their lead. But, boy, PDG, it's been a struggle. Hasn't scored a goal since the Canucks were in Montreal back in November, and that was an empty netter. He hasn't beaten a National Hockey League goaltender since a 5-0 win at home against St. Louis back in late October.
And he started in the top six.
I know. And you know, you mentioned Lafferty, you mentioned Bluger, and ultimately we don't know where Teddy Bluger is going to fit in all of this, and I don't want to lump Bluger in with the rest of them, but man, every game that goes by here, I keep thinking that Rick Tocchet must be begging Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin to mix things up in terms of the group that they've got as fourth liners. Like, Nils Amon's a healthy scratch 4 straight games now. He's been replaced by guys that are getting called up from Abbotsford, so clearly they don't have a whole lot of faith and trust in him. But when he's in there, you know, he basically wears a uniform, but there is no, he's got some penalty killing utility, I suppose. But I just can't think that this team is going to go forward towards the playoffs with the collection of players they've got in their fourth line right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And if you know, to me, I like Sam Lafferty's speed enough that I wouldn't mind seeing him get a few shifts a game in place of Mikheyev in the top six, but not that he's a long-term solution, right? But you're right, because regardless of what you do in your top six, like, that group as a bottom line is not good enough right now as currently constructed. And in the playoffs, you need something out of your fourth line. You get games that go into double and triple overtime. Like, you need to have something in that group, if for no other reason, to take the pressure off your main guys. And there have been times when we've seen them, you know, play shifts in the offensive end. I think the last game, there was a bit of that. So there've been some moments, you know, and are they, you know, is it a better group of players than it was a year ago? Potentially. But right now, I think all the Canucks are going to be able to do is nibble around the edges of their roster. And that's going to be potentially adding a fourth line player, right? You know, a depth defenseman. And I think right now, to be honest, I think the forwards are more important because I think once they get healthy, and we know that Soucy's close to health, and if we believe what the team is saying, that Myers is week to week, and we don't think it's a season-ending injury. And again, I've got no reason to believe it is, but when you say week to week, and you know a team generally downplays this stuff, especially close to the trade deadline, because they don't want to be seen as a team that's got any level of panic going on. So assuming Myers gets back and assuming Soucy's coming back, I think their bigger needs are up front. I think that's what you're going to see them go after, is some additional pieces in the fourth line.
Yeah, well, they get more games like this from Big Z. What a setup to Connor Garland. Nikita Zadorov plays almost 19 minutes without Myers. Ian Cole was up at 19:33. And remember, I mean, they only had to kill one penalty, so these numbers aren't inflated with penalty killing time. They were in a bit of a pinch, and so Hughes and Hronek obviously led the team in ice time But then you got Cole at 1933. You've got Zadorov at 1854. And Noah Juulsen, who took the one penalty, played 17, almost 18 minutes.
And that's not good. Like, that is not good. Right? Like, that's not a sustainable formula for success for this team, having some of those guys playing the minutes that they're playing.
Right. And so for all the people that want to run Tyler Myers out of town here.
He's been great since the All-Star break.
They need Tyler Myers and his minutes and the role that they've plugged him in here. But they need Carson Soucy back too. And that was encouraging to see him at practice on Saturday, fully involved, penalty killing against the Canucks' top power play unit. He's close. He said as much. So I wasn't surprised that he didn't play in this game. They bring up Matt Irwin, which was interesting. Tyler Myers is still on the roster, by the way, now to get Soucy. They'd have to activate him, but I think it would be as easy as putting Myers on the injured list, and then you could have Carson Soucy on your active roster. So he may be good to go on Tuesday. I would imagine the Canucks set to practice in Southern California on Monday, and maybe we get a better sense of how they'll line up against the Los Angeles Kings on Tuesday. This felt like a Casey DeSmith start. It was a Casey DeSmith start. He wasn't
needed
terribly,
to be. Like, it needed to be.
No, you're absolutely right. And he, you know, he wasn't busy. 19 shots on goal, only three in that first period. But I kind of wondered, with the first shot on goal for both teams going in, like, was that going to spook him at all? Hadn't played since he gave up eight in the 10-7 loss in Minnesota. No, he buckles down. Ultimately, a goaltender's job is to stop pucks. Only one gets past him. So that's a success. It's his second win since Christmas. Now, he has picked up points along the way, and every point is valuable for the Vancouver Canucks, but there was a scramble there about 4 minutes into the third period where Max Jones tried to slide the puck. Killorn was all alone at the back post, and the pass hit Filip Hronek's skate. If that gets through, it's probably a two. Like, I don't know how Killorn would miss there, so that puck never got to the net. DeSmith didn't have to make a save. Again, I thought in the second period, Ducks got traffic to the net. They controlled play. He wasn't busy, but he had to make a couple saves. What do you make of Casey DeSmith's night overall?
Yeah, I thought he was fine. I thought there were a couple of moments where he may have lost his net just a little bit, right? Like the puck that goes off the end boards and bounces back to him real quick. I think there were a few moments where he was fortunate. You know, you talk about the one play that if they get it to Terry at the side, that's going in. You know, I think about around the same time, I want to say about 5 minutes, a little over 5 minutes into the second period, Ronan turns the puck over and the Ducks get some traffic, but they can't get a shot. And then they wind up clearing. Terry has a chance from the slot, like a high danger chance that he puts it wide. You know, there were a few of those moments, and you know, the shot that hit the joint of the post and crossbar, you know, that's coming down off the rush on the left side. And if that goes in, DeSmith probably feels like that's not a good goal, right? Because his body language, when it hit the iron, I think he thought it went in, and you know, didn't look like he was thrilled at that moment, which you shouldn't. But he also did make some saves. You know, there was like 3 minutes to go. I think he had a save that was off a deflection in tight, and there was a loose puck in front. He controlled it after another turnover. So look, he did some good things, and he just needed a result, right? I mean, given what he's been through, sitting on that Minnesota loss, and there have been other opportunities where they could have, and quite frankly, should have played DeSmith. You know, Demko's been good, but we haven't seen him stand on his head enough, right? Like, he hasn't been part of the problem as I see it, but he hasn't necessarily stolen games for them during this run. DeSmith needed that result in a big way. And the fact that it's just one goal and he held on the fort in the third period, he's got to feel good about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And they're going to need him. You know, probably 19 games to go, probably five more games. They've got one more set of back-to-backs. There's some opponents on that homestand where you can spot him a starter. I mean, they're nine-game homestand. He's probably going to play two there somewhere along the line, maybe three. We'll see. But I would imagine that this little breather for Demko, you know, a rematch against the Kings, into Vegas for the first time this season, and then home to Winnipeg, the rematch of the game last month, probably another Demko-Hellebuck showdown on a Saturday night, and then Colorado. So, I mean, they really are running the gauntlet here. They needed to give Demko a bit of a break. He had started five straight and 9 of 10, and so mission accomplished on that front. DeSmith gets the victory, and the Canucks put these 2 points in their back pocket as they hold off the Anaheim Ducks. Again, it wasn't convincing, but a win here is the same as a win earlier in the season, the 10-1 win, the 2-1 win, whatever. You take those 2 points and you move on across town. And so, you know, they don't have far to go here. They'll stay in Southern California. They take on the Kings on Thursday night, looking for a little revenge from that 5-1 loss on home ice against Los Angeles last Thursday. Jeff and Farhan with you. This is Rinkwide Vancouver. A lot still ahead coming up on the program. You're going to get inside the locker room. We'll hear from the coach and Hopefully a couple of players. We'll get to our Rink-wide Vancouver three-star selection, the staff that stands out from this night. We'll get a little listener feedback going as well, and we'll look ahead to what's still to come here on this road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. 2-1, they down the Ducks. You're listening to Rink-wide Vancouver. Vancouver Canucks defeat the Anaheim Ducks by a score of 2-1. Jeff and Farhan breaking it down with you here on Rink-wide Vancouver. You're going to hear from Rick Tocchet. You're going to hear from Casey DeSmith in a moment. All of our post-game audio on Rink-wide, a presentation of Mr. Lube, 100% Canadian, pioneers of the no-appointment oil change, and now providing tire service and sales. And again, no appointment needed. 16 locations in the Lower Mainland. For one near you, go to MrLube.com. Rick Tocchet's talked about this a fair bit here over the last couple of weeks, that with the playoffs coming, the Canucks have to be comfortable in some of these low-event, low-scoring games, and that's kind of how he saw this one, and obviously happy to come out on the right end of the score.
I thought for the most part, it was a grind game. You know, you have to win those games 2-1. You know, I don't think we gave them a lot, not a lot of great is, and when they did, Casey was there for us.
Yeah, Farhan, he calls it a grind game, and it was. I mean, this wasn't pretty hockey. It wasn't wide-open trading chances, but a lot of times in the playoffs, that's going to be the case, and they're going to see better opponents than the Ducks, but all of these are building blocks, you know, for a team that really hasn't had its best stuff now for a couple of weeks.
Absolutely, and you know, you look at the first period, and it was a pretty game, right? Like, I mean, they didn't finish the rate we've seen them finish so many times earlier this season when things were rolling for them. But in terms of their process, again, an ordinary team on the other side, but I thought they played really well. They've generated so much in that first period, and then after that, yeah, it turned into a bit of a grind. And right now, I mean, you know, I'm not sure if these are the dog days or this is the home stretch. Like, I haven't figured out which cliche it is. You know what I mean? Because 20 games, okay, but like the playoffs, you could see it from here, right? So is it the home stretch when you've got Edmonton winning again and they've still got all those games in hand? Like, or like, you know, or do you just kind of have to get through the next 6 or 8 games before then you really, really get serious? I don't know.
Well, you've got to get through the next 2 that take you to Friday's trade deadline. I think after the trade deadline, then it's clear sailing that is the stretch run.
Yeah, fair.
And look, the Oilers have a bunch of games in hand, but that means a condensed schedule for them. They still have 2 Eastern road trips to do. And the Vancouver Canucks essentially are finished, you know, their big travel's done. They don't leave the time zone for a while. So that's where the schedule should work in the Canucks' favor. But we'll see how that all plays out. Look, Rick Tocchet, he saw things the way that we did. We talked about it in the opening segment. We felt that Nils Höglander was the best Canuck on the ice, and the head coach liked a lot of what he saw from his forward that opened the scoring in this hockey game.
Yeah, I thought Hoagie's one of our best forwards. You know, he was maybe our best forward. He had some jump, kept the puck on his stick a lot, drove their D wide. I got to admit, Hoagie was really good. Not many turnovers from him behind their net, come up with loose pucks. So yeah, Hoagie. I think Hoagie was really good tonight.
Well, that's a change from some of the things that head coaches have had to say about Nils Höglander after games throughout his NHL career. Interesting, though, that Tocchet brings up the turnovers there and says that there weren't many. But, you know, that is a part of the Nils Höglander experience, that you love the offense, you love all the goals, but if he's not going to be responsible and hold his own defensively, that's where he's going to run into trouble. That's where he's going to see his ice time cut. So, you know, checked a lot of boxes in the eyes of Rick Tocchet. Some pretty high praise there from the head coach.
Yeah, and Tocchet did talk about the turnovers, but he didn't specifically talk about his defensive play. Now, that's a good thing, right? Really, right now, this is trust, right? Because the way this guy is playing, you have to keep him in your top 6. You have to. And that's going to mean, you know, tough matchups and big game moments and huge games, things like that. Like, he has to earn the coach's trust, and it seems like he's slowly starting to do that. I mean, we've said before, like, even with a player like Kuzmenko, if you were producing offensively, the coach is going to live with some mistakes. He just wasn't producing, right? So you don't live with mistakes. In the case of Mikheyev, he's not producing, but he doesn't make defensive mistakes, right? He's not hurting them, other than the fact he's the place where scoring chances go to die right now. But, you know, so right now for me, I just think that Höglander is just so noticeable and so productive in the offensive end. He's going to have to do some really bad things defensively or in the turnover area for him to not play as much as he should be playing. And it's nice to see the coaches building trust in the player.
Well, the coach like Höglander, the coach like Casey DeSmith as well. We're not going to play that clip, but you're going to hear from DeSmith, and this is wild. Like, we talked about what was sort of at stake for him, the Minnesota meltdown. But beyond that, You know, the Canucks had leads in Detroit that got away. They had a lead in Columbus at the end of that 7-game road trip in January. Now, it's not all on the goaltender, but it was a 2-1 game to the third period. You didn't want to see that trend continue, and ultimately it didn't. Casey DeSmith gave up one early goal, and that was it. But listen to Casey DeSmith on the significance of this win on the pond over the Anaheim Ducks.
I don't know if I've ever been so happy to win a game. Like, obviously, personally, it feels really good. Kind of get off the skid, but you know, also the team, it's a huge win for the team to start off this road trip on the right foot, you know, after a couple of tough losses. It just feels really good in here right now. Every team in this league is good, so that's a good win for us.
He's not wrong. There are no easy games in the NHL, but I don't know if I've ever been so happy to win a game, Farhan.
Hey, look, that's awesome, right? And you know, and we in the media would be, from time to time, we would be criticized for like throwing that at him, like, hey, is this the biggest win you've ever had, like, or at least in your time as a Canuck? And yeah, like, you know, he kind of admits it in this case, right, that this did matter a lot, right? And it's okay to say that. It truly is, because with that, even though he didn't say it, with that, I think a ton of pressure is going to be taken off this guy in his next start, right? Because we talked about him having to sit on that Minnesota game, and there have been moments along the way. That Chicago game is the one that jumps out where he should have played this guy, but they didn't play him, so he had to stew in it. And you know, good for him. Like, it you can tell it's a total weight off his shoulder, and they're going to need him at some point.
8-4-5 now is his record on the season. So 8 wins and 9 losses, but 5 of the losses have been to overtime. So he has delivered points for the Vancouver Canucks. And as we said, right now, with where they are, every point's a good one. You get 2, absolutely. You take that and you move on. All of our post-game audio, a presentation of Mr. Lube. All right, let's move on to the 3 stars, the Rink-wide Vancouver 3 stars. The 3 stars selected in the building of the Honda Center, Quinn Hughes was the first star in this hockey game. Now, there are lots of nights Quinn Hughes should be the first star. I don't know. He was fine, and a great setup for Hoglander. Played a lot, obviously. Olin Zellweger, they've got a good one on their hands. They've got so much young talent there. Mason McTavish, Leo Carlson didn't even play in this hockey game. Trevor Zegras is hurt, so a lot of their young talent not available and on display in this game. But Olin Zellweger, this is a guy that scored a ton of goals as a defenseman in the Western Hockey League. The Kamloops Blazers picked him up for their run to the Memorial Cup that fell short last year, but he's had pro potential written all over him for a while and noticed him, and he's only going to get better from here. So a couple of defensemen, the first 2 stars, and then Connor Garland was given star number 3. Now, people that have been listening to us know that we're going to veer from that script. Nils Hoglander was the first star in my mind. I don't think there's much doubt. Opened the scoring, was strong on the forecheck, had 3 shifts on the night, and responsible defensively as well. So a good all-around night for Nils Hoglander. I've got Garland as the second star. You know, he didn't have to do a lot of work on his goal. A terrific setup by Nikita Zadorov after the power play ended, but they kept the pressure on. But Garland putting himself in the right spot, a right-handed shot. That's not always easy to redirect the puck the way that he did as a right shot with that pass coming from the right side. But I thought that line with Podkolzin and Lindholm did a lot of good things. You talked about some of the underlying numbers there. So a good night for Connor Garland, who hadn't scored since the Chicago game, since Dakota Joshua left the lineup. So, you know, that had to feel good for Connor Garland to get his 12th goal of the season. Long time coming. And then I went with Alex Killorn as the 3rd star. He scored the only goal. Bit of a strange bounce, but his 9th goal of the season. But on top of that, and honestly, when I looked at the stat sheet, I had to double check. But he had 3 shots on goal on 10 attempts, Farhan. I didn't notice Alex Killorn that much.
No, I thought both he and Terry were very good tonight.
Yeah.
You know, offensively. And I thought they missed a lot of shots. As much as we're happy for Casey DeSmith, he didn't have to make some of those 5 alarm saves because, you know, those guys missed the net, but they were in high danger areas on a number of occasions. And, you know, Quinn Hughes, they picked him first. I don't hate that. Like I said, 10 shot attempts for Hughes in this game. He was noticeably trying to be more aggressive offensively as I saw it. You know, you mentioned the setup on the Hoglander goal early, just a beautiful move to create some space and make that pass. I thought it was a good step forward for Quinn.
No, it is.
And no, Juleson's another guy I quite like because the 6 hits, but also I thought he was better transitioning the puck in this game than what we've seen against forechecks in some time.
I am happy to give Noah Juleson an honorable mention. Quinn Hughes can always be among the stars. And you're right. When he has 10 attempts, like, that tells you A, that he's got the puck on his stick an awful lot, but he's looking to shoot. And I think that is something that's going to help him and the hockey club if he's able to keep that up.
And I know we grade Hughes on a curve, so maybe based on that, this isn't that night, but I liked him.
No, I like him most nights. And he does pick up an assist, the primary assist on the Hoglander goal, a minute and 37 seconds into the hockey game. All right, still to come, we've got our stat that stands out. We've got lots of listener feedback to get to. We'll touch on Elias Pettersson. I want to pick your brain on sort of the events of the last 48 hours or so, because it's our first chance to talk to you here on the pod. So we'll get to that and a little bit of look ahead at what is still to come here on the road trip and the week ahead for the Vancouver Canucks. 2-1, they defeat the Anaheim Ducks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Vancouver Canucks hold off this Anaheim Duck Hockey Club 2-1. These teams will meet one more time in Vancouver. So that was it. Their lone look at the pond this year, and they get out of there with a 2-1 victory. Let's get to the stat that stands out. And Farhan, we talked about this in the opening segment, but every goal the guy scores, it's just more of a remarkable story for a player that was sent to the American Hockey League. They wanted him to round out his game, learn the defensive side. He's heard from three NHL head coaches, plus a couple of other coaches down in the minors now. But, I mean, Nils Höglander has built himself back to a legitimate National Hockey Leaguer who has 19 goals, all at even strength. They've got 19 games remaining. Like, 25 absolutely should be in his crosshairs this season.
I couldn't agree more. And I just love watching him play, right? I mean, every hockey fan appreciates that guy that's just constantly tenacious. And this market has had those, whether it was a Yannick Hansen or an Alex Burrows and guys that just, you know, create for themselves and create for those around them. And I think that's what Höglander's become, right? And he wasn't always that player when he first came in and he, you know, he made the NHL roster the first time around, more than anything because the team was so bloody bad that why the hell not, right? So... Yeah. You know, and he needed to round out his game and they needed to send him down for a period of time and do some of those things, especially as Rick Tocchet came in and you know, demanded a certain level of system and structure. So it was a good thing. But I appreciate the fact that, you know, didn't go down, didn't pout, didn't demand a trade, didn't threaten to go back to Europe, didn't do any of those things. Just put his head down, diligent, worked, and just became that type of player because so many of these guys, and he was one of them that when he first came in, it wasn't all about puck retrieval. Like he came in with a reputation of being a goal scorer, right? So he had to learn a different side of the game and he committed to doing that. So to watch him develop the way he has, I think it's a huge bonus for the Canucks right now.
Well, that is our stat that stands out. 19 goals for Nils Höglander. And I think the other thing too is like when Elias Pettersson gets back to being the player that we know he can be. Like, if those two are together, like, that's only going to play into Höglander's hands. Like, we're just not seeing a lot of Petey magic these days. And so Höglander, you know, I mean, he created a bunch on his own as a fourth-line guy. Now he's been elevated. But when Petey gets it going again, that should accelerate. And the other thing, too, is at some point, maybe he does get a power play goal. He's on that second unit. So maybe he throws one of those in for good measure. But I would think 25 has to be his target now.
So now, as you mentioned the power play, not much in the way of attempts, but we saw PP1 reunited with Connor Garland added, right? What'd you make of it?
Not a lot. Not enough shots. Again, that continues to be an issue. They pass it around the perimeter. You know, they had 4 minutes power play time, just two shots on goal in that time, and I thought looked sloppy. It carried over from the first period, and then they started the second period. They had the brief 5-on-3, but really it was four consecutive minutes of power play time. I didn't think they did enough with it, quite frankly, and obviously they didn't score. So it remains a work in progress. I'm still not convinced that Garland is the guy.
Yeah, you know where I noticed him, though, JP, is that he was a lot more involved in entries than I expected in that spot, right? And you can see what's happening because, you know, we've grown accustomed to Quinn Hughes often just taking it himself and entering the zone, right? And they're doing a lot to take away from him, and they're forcing him to kind of put the drop pass into space as opposed to just behind him where he wants it to go quite often. So there were some times, and I didn't think Garland was too bad at it. I think he can give them a quick little change up and a guy that's not necessarily going to draw the focus of opposition's game plans as it relates to entries on the power play. But I don't know. Like it's going to take some time because he is a player that probably demands the puck a little bit, right?
Well, and if that's the strategy, and it's not a bad one, if he carries the puck across the blue line, other teams know that he's looking to pass, right? And so if they cheat and try and take away the pass, that's going to open up room to at least get into the zone and hopefully set up from there and do his thing. But he's not a threat to shoot, and really neither is Quinn Hughes. And so, you know, they don't have the threat. I mean, Besser's their shooting threat, but he's down low and then into the bumper area. Whatever, they didn't need a power play goal in this hockey game. There will be games here ahead where they do. I guess it's still open audition, really. I mean, you could move Lindholm back there. So we'll see where it goes. But and Rick Tocchet admitted after practice, like he said, like it was temporary. He thinks it achieved sort of what he was looking for, just to give everybody a bit of a breather on different units. But he said, like, there's going to come times in games where we need a goal and you're going to lean on your best players. And so.
But I do think, though, that Hughes did make more of an attempt to shoot the puck. I think they have him down for 10 attempts in this game. There was more wrist shot from the point, which I'm a huge fan of. So there was a bit of that. But the thing with Garland is there's no other obvious player to put on that power play, right? I mean, theoretically, they brought Lindholm in here to be that guy. If they sign Kessel, maybe he becomes that guy. I don't know. But, I don't think they're doing that group a disservice by having Garland on it.
Fair enough. Let's get into the listener feedback here. Lots of people weighing in now after each and every game, and we love that at Rinkwide Van. So keep those coming. 19 games to go, and then the real payoff comes with the playoff hockey for the first time in what feels like forever. Simon says, Hoglander in beast mode. Yeah, we talked about that a fair bit. Travis says, thought Pod Colson looked really good tonight. Want to give him more games, and I think he will earn more games. If Bane's got a 5-game run, I have to think that Pods is going to this was by design with this road trip and these opponents coming up here. This could be Pod Colson's time to shine. Eric says, thought we had a little too much trouble with Anaheim. Score was way too close. And we did touch on that you would have liked a convincing win, but ultimately, did they win? Yes, they did, on to Los Angeles, and they're going to have to be better there. Eclipse says, less penalties, which is a plus. And let's give them some credit there. Just one penalty.
That's the Tyler Myers effect.
Maybe a little bit. Noah Juulsen got called for a hold. I saw some people didn't think it was a call. I thought he did reach in. And at that point, you're putting the ref in a spot to make a judgment call. But whatever the case.
How about the 6 hits by Noah Juulsen?
Yeah, no, I mean,
big, noticeable.
Three early on in the hockey game. That got him into
minutes.
It. Yeah. So, but yes, look, Rick Tocchet's been beating this drum for a while about cut down on the penalties. And so for one night at least, they showed a little bit of discipline. The Ducks are the most penalized team in the National Hockey League. And that really didn't come to be because they had a too many men on the ice penalty, and then they had the slash as well. But, you know, not a penalty fest. Most of this game played at 5-on-5. Skilligan says, nothing really stood out. If this is all they've got, no team's going to fear them come round one. They have to up their game. There's no doubt. And this week ahead here, it's going to be fascinating. If we could fast forward to next Wednesday when they run this gauntlet, you know, if it goes well, I mean, that's going to up the belief, obviously. If it doesn't go well, then I think you're going to hear a lot of that, you know, are they really going to be a legitimate contender, regardless who they run into in round one? And if people aren't paying attention, like the Los Angeles Kings beat them handily on Thursday, the Kings beat the Devils earlier today. The Kings have moved right back. Like, they're breathing down Vegas's neck now. So where it looked like it was really 3 at the top and then some separation, the Los Angeles Kings have returned to the conversation. And if the Canucks aren't careful, they still got a cushion and they added to it with this win. But, you know, there's enough runway. They still play the Kings 3 more times that, you know, the Los Angeles Kings, not necessarily relegated to a wild card, is my point here. I'm sure they've got visions on climbing the ladder and moving into one of those divisional spots in the Pacific.
No doubt. And what they're doing with the number of key players that they've got injured is remarkable, right? I mean, I don't know how many of those they get back, if any. I haven't looked at their injury situation enough, but if they all of a sudden got 2 or 3 of those guys back going into a potential first round series with Vancouver. I mean, you know, go back to 2012 when we all assumed there was such a gap there. But if you looked under the hood at the Kings numbers post trade deadline, it was actually a different team. You know, now it's playing out in front of our eyes, and the Canucks are certainly going to get a good look at these guys with 3 more games down the stretch here, starting with Tuesday night. So yeah, Vancouver's got a lot to figure out, but a lot easier to do after you can kind of make a knot in the rope and get a win here.
Yeah, just exhale a little bit and know that you have to up your game. Cali Canuck says, DeSmith, so relieved he bounced back. This pre-playoff stretch run is arguably when he'll be needed the most. Had to show up, and He did. Dave of Earth says 92 and 51. Mark Friedman playing like they want a stick. 65, better but not good enough. And as we just talked about, 47, a beast tonight. Good road win. I don't know about Friedman. Didn't play an awful lot. Easily the low man on the totem pole. Didn't hurt the Vancouver Canucks, but you know his time is limited, certainly. Whenever Soucy is activated, when Myers gets back, you know, it takes a couple of guys being out of the lineup for Mark Friedman to even get a sniff of the lineup.
What do you think, you know, in terms of the goaltending, you know, like, and I think that for as far as Friedman's concerned, I think there's a real opportunity for Soucy to play. Like, if the Canucks practice Monday,
yeah,
I think there's a real opportunity Soucy plays Tuesday. However, in terms of goaltending, we know there's only one more back-to-back the rest of the way, and that's not until April. So as you look at this stretch of games, including nine straight at home to round out the month of March, and you said earlier that you think that DeSmith will get two games. Which ones?
On the homestand?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm looking at Buffalo. I'm looking at Montreal, Washington.
Yeah, but you're not going to play him in back. You're not playing him two games in a row.
Right.
Right? So the Sabres in Montreal are 2 days apart. I don't think that's happening.
The Ducks are there at the back end of the homestand, a Sunday afternoon early start. I think there are some games.
Maybe the Flames game on the 23rd? It's a Saturday night. That might be a tough one.
I mean, you can't let the schedule and Hockey Night in Canada dictate what's in the best interest of the hockey club. So they'll find some opportunities, obviously. But also, you know, the homestand, it's spread out. Like, it's not that onerous. Obviously, no travel. So I would think that there's an opportunity for Thatcher Demko to get on a run there when they come off the road here. But certainly the start of the homestand, Winnipeg and Colorado, those are going to be Thatcher Demko games, and they're going to need him to be at or near the top of his game. All right, just before we run here, this is our first chance to get you on board. I know that you covered the news yesterday of the Pettersson signing for TSN, but what did you make of a 7 a.m. Twitter announcement that they had come to terms, and he hadn't even put pen to paper yet?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had kind of gotten tipped off late the night before, around midnight, that it could be close to done. And I wasn't up at the 7 a.m. call because I had taken a sleeping pill the night before because of just some, you know, some minor sleep challenges I've had. So yeah, I got up at around 8:15, and there was no way from where I live I was going to make it for 9:30. So I just made, you know, I made sure a camera was there and I got there for practice. But all that said, you know, it's been interesting to see how it's been framed in the days since, right? So first of all, to all Canuck fans, especially those on Canuck Twitter that hate the media, and believe me, I'm not taking credit on behalf of the media, or nor should the media take credit for this happening, but this should explain to all of you people why questions constantly get asked. And in the case of Pettersson, I think we treated him with a ton of respect. You know, he got asked day one of training camp three questions. It was you, me, and iMac. And then I asked him a question in January. And the only reason I asked him in January, and that was the first time he'd been asked since, was because in the week leading up to it, the agent suggested that, yeah, we might try to, you know, see if there's a change at the All-Star break. Or and then Alvin also said that, you know, we'd love to have some clarity, right, going into the deadline and building our roster. So I felt it was a reasonable time to ask the question because we were past the 40-game mark. He didn't want to answer it. That's fine. You know, we had other people that talked to him on Wednesday. I fully believe his answer was no until like Tuesday night, Wednesday, when they actually began negotiating, right? Actually, I shouldn't say that. My understanding is that on Sunday, that's when he finally gave his agents the green light to start moving forward. And they didn't get there until Tuesday. And then it kind of started getting, you know, down to the short strokes. But, you know, the noise brought him back to the table. And the suggestion that, oh, this was always the week we had targeted, I think that's kind of, you know, trying to control the narrative that we were always in control of the timing and all of that. I don't think that was the case. I'm sure that Alvin and Pettersson's agents had long been talking, but if they had created the structure of a contract in the final 3 days, they wouldn't have been going back between 5-year and 8-year deals. Right. So I fully believe that the noise in the marketplace brought the player back to the table. He even admitted it to a point, right, in terms of feeling the pressure and hearing it all. But just understand, people, this is why we ask questions. And what someone says at the beginning isn't carte blanche. They don't get to decide what we ask for the rest of the year, because this is living proof. Things change. Shit happens. things change. And that's why at reasonable periods of time, if you're not asking as a journalist, you're not doing your job. If Elliot Friedman didn't ask questions, you know, before that hockey night hit, if Frank Saravalli didn't ask questions, right? Like it's an entirely different circumstance. And let's not kid ourselves. The team made the leaks, right? Like they wanted to create the noise and use the media to help create the noise. But we got to ask questions every now and again. So when we ask questions, we're not evil. It's part of the job. And this is living proof.
No, and I'm glad you pointed out that like we didn't clobber him over the head on any sort of regular basis. I gave him his space, and I hope he appreciated that. I mean, it has to be a two-way street, ultimately. But like I think people had this sort of vision that like we were all stalking him in the hallway, waiting for him to step off the ice on a daily basis, where how many times like you see him sitting in his stall where nobody's requested to speak to him on a given day? Like there are lots of days over the course of a season where he doesn't have to do any sort of media.
Well, keep in mind, right? I mean, you know, for him, you know, he wanted to make sure he was making the right decision and he wanted to wait to do that. Number one. Number two, you probably felt from his perspective that negotiating in season would create a distraction, and ultimately not negotiating created an even bigger distraction. And when you have an information void, people are going to fill it. So even though we weren't asking questions, he knew people were talking. Like he knew,
for sure.
The national media putting things out there, you know, and us reacting to them, not necessarily asking him questions, but you know, whether it's this platform or others or Sakaris and Price, like people are asking, they're having the conversation. And for a person like that, who's active on social media, he probably can't split that hair between media and social media. So all of it leads to a whole bunch of noise. And, you know, ultimately he was affected by it.
All right. You are our prediction man here at Rinkwide. When we get you on, you tried to predict the last road trip where they went winless. You had them getting a single point somewhere. It didn't quite pan out, but they start this trip with 2 points, but it's this 4-game stretch now, 2 on the road, 2 at home. Los Angeles, Vegas, Winnipeg, Colorado.
2-2.
What are the 2-2?
Yeah. They're going to beat the Kings, lose to Vegas, lose to the Jets, and beat the Avalanche.
Okay. The way Vegas is going these days, I think Vegas is a gettable opponent.
I do too.
Yeah. And so it would be nice to see them exact a little bit of revenge and certainly play better, their top end guys, than they did against the Kings last week. And as I said earlier, they still got 3 to go, including Tuesday, against this Los Angeles team. So you'd like to think that they could rise to the challenge and take some points off the LA Kings, a very possible first round playoff opponent. All right, you've heard it from Farhan. Now we'll see how these games play out. But he says 2-2 over this tough 4-game stretch. The Canucks open the road trip with a 2-1 win in Anaheim. Hoglander and Garland, the goal scorers. Alex Killorn, the lone scorer for the Anaheim Ducks. For Farhan, this is Jeff. As always, we appreciate you listening to this latest edition of Rinkwide Vancouver. We'll do another one on Tuesday after the Canucks and the Kings.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.